you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
Welcome back to It Could Happen Here, a podcast that is today about it happening here, or more particularly in Atlanta. So it's here if you happen to live in Atlanta, Georgia. Otherwise, it is still happening there. And I don't actually know much about this because, like the rest of you, I have been watching from the sidelines since a forest defender was killed by the Georgia State Police. But someone who has been in Atlanta for most of the last week is Garrison Davis. Garrison!
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
It's been a long week.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You had just gotten back from CES when all this happened and booked the next flight and flew out. And we're on the ground during some of the immediate protests that followed news about the death. Do you want to just kind of take it from here?
Yeah. So we're going to be putting together kind of a more in-depth thing similar to my on the ground at Defend the Atlanta Forest episodes from last May. That's going to come out, but you know, it'll take a little bit because I'm doing a lot of interviews, doing a lot of on the ground stuff here.
Yeah.
But this is important enough that I feel like it was worth mentioning something a bit sooner, which is why we're recording here today, just to kind of give a 101 on what's been going on ever since Wednesday. So Wednesday, January 18th, there was a raid on the Wilani Forest or the South River Forest in Atlanta, where people have been currently staying in encampments for the past like year and a half in opposition of this upcoming proposed police training facility to be built on this same land. So Wednesday morning, there was this raid. There's a few things different about this raid. One, it seemed to be in some ways kind of led by the Georgia State Patrol. This is a state-run police that has not been in this force before. Other raids have been coordinated between the DeKalb County Police and Atlanta Police. So the SWAT team was unfamiliar with the forest. They had not been in there before. There was other police on site. This was an interagency thing. It does seem like there was Atlanta police here as well. But this started at around 8 a.m. And then at around 9 a.m., we got word that a forest defender was shot and killed by, it seems like, an estate patrol officer that they are not releasing the name of. Nor are they releasing the name of one other officer who was injured, and Georgia State Patrol claims that they were shot during this raid as well. Police
by
say
the decedent.
That, Yes, police claim that they were shot by the person that the Georgia State Patrol killed. There's very little information about this.
No body cameras.
Nope. They have said that there's no body cam, which does seem consistent because Georgia State Patrol are not required to wear body cam. So that obviously hit a lot of people pretty hard because this is, to our knowledge, the first environmentalist protester to be killed by police. It's the first fatality that we've had in this movement here in Atlanta.
And for the record, it is still deeply unclear what happened. It's certainly not impossible that this person fired first on the police officer, but it's also incredibly important to note that there is no evidence of this that's been presented. The only evidence that the police have presented is a photo of a pistol on the ground, and then they've made the very weaselly worded claim that ballistics testing has shown that the bullet that struck the officer was consistent with the gun that they're saying the individual they killed had.
And now, all that means is that it was 9mm.
That
allegedly.
It was the same caliber, right? A caliber for which there are tens of millions of guns in this country. Most ballistic science is, in terms of like identifying bullets to guns, is actually nonsense. There have been massive lawsuits about this. The FBI this is a bigger topic than we can get into today, but it's very shady. And all that they actually said is the cop was shot with a 9mm, and hey, look, we found a 9mm. Interestingly enough, we have confirmed that this gun was fired.
Correct.
So no one knows what's happened.
It's shady. I mean, so I got here like less than 24 hours later. A lot of people on the ground have been kind of sharing their memories of the person that was killed. So the person was named, their forest name was Tortuguita, which means little turtle. Their name that has been released is Manuel. I'm going to call them Tortuguita or Tort.
Sure.
There's been people have, spent a lot of the past few days talking about Tort, remembering Tort, the types of things that they advocated for, the types of things that they would talk about. So we'll get into some of the more kind of specifics of that later.
But yeah, a number of other journalists have talked about their conversations with Tort, including the fact that they evinced a pretty principled and extensive commitment to nonviolence. At least in interviews, this is something they had been quoted on by other journalists a number of times.
And this is something I've heard a lot of people bring up: is that Tort was a believer in nonviolence and would talk about and advocate that. The other kind of angle to this, and I'm not taking a position one way or another here, but this is something that I think is important to mention, is that I also don't want to remove the agency of a person if they did decide to do this. Because the other thing I've heard a lot about Tort is that they always made thoughtful decisions, meaning that they put thought into everything they did. They acted strategically. They did not put people in unnecessary danger. They would not do something if they thought it would endanger other people. They always acted with thought, and that could include if you feel like your life is under immediate threat. What actually happened Wednesday morning, we will probably never know. We will never know the exact series of events.
Yeah.
And in some ways, like that's. We should respect Tort either way, because they made a decision that they thought that was right in the moment, or they were just flat out murdered by police. So that's kind of the gist of what happened Wednesday morning. Throughout the rest of the day, their police continued their raid on the forest. The last tree sitter was eventually taken down like 20 hours later after the raids. Someone was stuck up in a tree for over 20 hours, no food or water, police agitating them the entire time. And many, other people arrested, I think a total around 7, got charged with domestic terrorism, among other charges. So that's pretty significant. That is people... that, and we will circle back to this point a little bit later. So that is what happened on Wednesday. You know, the first few hours after the shooting, people were unsure of who actually got killed. It was hard to say. Other forest defenders who were in the area did report from that what they heard. There was a pretty quick single firing of guns, multiple guns going off in a pretty quick succession. There was no like one shot, and then seconds later, a bunch of other shots. It was all kind of one event. This is reports from people on the ground. This is what they've said. A lot of people speculate that this could have been friendly fire if this other patrol officer was you know, got shot. They went to the hospital, so.
It does appear that a police officer got a bullet inside of them.
Yes.
But obviously there's a number of ways in which that could have occurred. And I don't think it's conspiratorial at all to say they have not presented evidence. It is certainly possible that a bunch of cops wandering through the forest, somebody would have a negligent discharge, you know, somebody would just pant, you know, we probably will never know precisely what happened.
Yeah. And that's the feeling on the ground. A lot of people coming to terms with the fact that we will never know. A lot of people, you know, thinking that it, you know, very likely chance it was friendly fire. Other people, you know, trying to emphasize the fact that, you know, we will never know. We cannot say one way or another, but it's also important not to minimize someone's autonomy, especially since they're no longer around to advocate for themselves or their actions. Let's have an ad break, and then we'll kind of continue on to what happened in the days after.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
We're back. Garrison, please continue to take it away.
So the day of the shooting, there was a vigil. Before we found out who it was, there was a vigil set up at Little Five Points in Atlanta. And then the next 2 days, there was a vigil space created at Entrenchment Creek Park or Wolani People's Park. This is an area of the forest that's on like the eastern side, and this is the section that is currently being sought as a place to expand Black Hall movie studios. So this is separate from the actual Cop City element of this, but it's still part of the Defend the Atlanta Forest side of this, because this is all the same forest. They're just kind of split down the middle by this power line cut. So this section of the park is on a section of land that's contestedly owned by Ryan Millsap, the guy who runs Black Hole Studios. I first arrived at Wilani People's Park on Friday for the more public facing vigil. And I just want to talk a bit about the park, because this is such a solid encapsulation of what's changed since last time I've been in Atlanta. So last time I was in Atlanta, there was the Muscogee Creek people were traveling from, I believe, Oklahoma to Atlanta. Well, what is now Atlanta? What used to be Muscogee land? And they were like giving talks and presentations about the forest inside the section of forest that the Defend the Atlanta Forest stuff is about. And I went to one of those events at Entrenchment Creek Park. It was, green trees all around. There was a nice gazebo. There was a piano inside the gazebo. People handing out food. A little kitchen was set up. Pretty picturesque. It was pretty great. So then when I pulled up to this same spot a few days ago, it was like apocalyptic. The gazebo has been completely torn down and is laying in shambles in the front of the parking lot, for everyone to see the destroyed remains. All of the concrete sidewalks and stuff have all been torn up and is just scattered everywhere. It's just a massive mud pit. It's such a different place. And when you get there for a vigil, the mood's not cheery, obviously. There was people, sharing stories of Tort, singing songs, and, building this almost like a vigil shrine. So that was like the first big thing Friday night. So a lot of people talked about their memories of Tort and, the different things they contributed to, not just the Defend the Atlanta Forest stuff, but stuff across the entire South. They did mutual aid work and stuff to secure housing for people in Florida. They helped defend drag shows in Tennessee. They did stuff all across the South, and they had allies and accomplices from across the South, talking about how great Tort was to work with and the types of solidarity that Tort would show to many, many different people. So that was Friday, and everyone was you could kind of feel the almost calm before the storm in some ways. People didn't really know what was going to happen in the coming days, but there was a sense of eerie quietness. And then Saturday happens. Saturday, there is this protest planned meeting in Underground Atlanta, which is a spot in downtown Atlanta, kind of on the south side. I got there for this protest. Initially, there was people from this socialist organization called PSL. They tried to lead the march one way. The crowd rejected their authority and was like, no, we're not going to go to the federal district. We're not going to go to the CNN Center, which are places notorious for getting kettled at. And people autonomously redirected the crowd north towards the... And north is also just so happens to be the direction of the Atlanta Police Foundation headquarters, the pseudo union lobbying group that is behind the big push for Cop City. But before this march started, there was similarly, people giving speeches about Tort, people not speeches, people just sharing memories of Tort, so that Tort can live on in some way, so people can know about them now that they're no longer around. People from a local medic collective talking about, Tort's involvement in that and how much Tort cared about, helping other people. So this march starts up. It was funny. There was a few blocks away from this march location, there just so happened to be a single police car in the street, but parked on the wrong side of the road. And this police car sees this march coming. And it's kind of freaking out. It doesn't know what to do. It drives in reverse for like two blocks trying to find a spot to turn around as the march is like increasingly getting closer. Like you could feel the anxiety of the cop inside this car. They do not want to get surrounded by a crowd. Eventually they're able to back up enough to turn around and they get out. They are zooming away. They do not want to be anywhere near this. And shortly after, people arrive at the Atlanta Police Foundation headquarters. Windows spontaneously shatter, as is expected. A few bank windows also get broken. Wells Fargo being one of them.
R.I.P.
Yes, R.I.P. bank windows. Wells Fargo being another one. Wells Fargo is a major contributor to the Atlanta Police Foundation. So this happens. Two cop cars that are just, you know, blocks away, that are sitting completely empty, get their windows smashed. You know, there's fireworks going off around the crowd. There's this one clip that I saw from some group that was live streaming, that there was a few officers like stationed beside the Atlanta Police Foundation, and as soon as they heard fireworks, they again similarly just like ran away as fast as they could. They were not equipped to deal with fireworks were the main thing that they seemed to be scared of. So two cop cars get their windows smashed, fireworks going around. March continues, goes for about a few more blocks, and then corkers notice police are starting to come. Police are approaching the crowd head on. Police start rushing towards the crowd. They tackle a few people holding a banner. People scatter. Most of the crowd gets away. Most of the crowd splits up into two groups. The largest chunk is able to move away from police presence. There's, you know, people chanting "Be water," you know, all the stuff. So most people do successfully get away. The smaller section of people split off in another direction. Cops follow. They are able to tackle and arrest a few more people in this group. In the end, it looks like there was six people arrested. Most people got away. After all these arrests are happening, people start noticing something that in the background, a few blocks previous to where people were marching, there looks to be a glowing police car. So we look back, and sure enough, an Atlanta police car is up in flames, completely glowing, huge flames. So as that happens, more and more cops show up. This is where like the cops now are like taking over downtown. You know, cops with AR-15 or AR style rifles are going around starting to do patrols. So this is like the night is over at this point. Now it's time for like people to scatter and leave, which is what people did. The aftermath of this is super fascinating and unfortunate, if not unexpected. You know, there's been very little statements about the police killing of Tortuguita, of, you know, an environmental activist, forest defender. Very little statements addressing this matter at all. A huge flood of statements, however, seeming to be extremely concerned that like a few windows were broken and that a cop car got torched. This is
terrorism.
And, you know, this is less than a week after Martin Luther King Day. The big quote was that the police chief a few hours later declared that breaking windows and starting fires is terrorism, which is a wild thing for a police chief to say as the mayor stands behind nodding in agreement.
It's one of the most fascist things that has occurred in the United States.
You cannot understate like the severity
lifetime.
Of the severity of this change in the types of framing by the state.
Yeah.
To describe civil disobedience, to describe property destruction, to describe vandalism as a form of domestic terrorism is appalling.
I mean, if this holds up, then in states where this is done, there is effectively no longer any right to protest.
Yeah. And I mean, and we'll get into some of the details of this in a bit, even in this episode. And I think the other side of this is that this is something that I've heard people talk about here on the ground, is that if breaking windows is terrorism, right? If the destruction of inanimate objects is terrorism, what exactly is destroying an entire forest? Like, this is like the juxtaposition that people are dealing with on the ground right now. So the result of this is that we got six people who were, to be clear, arrested completely at random. This was very clear. Police were tackling anyone they could get their hands on. They were not doing targeted arrests. They were not going after specific individuals who they suspected of like actually doing crimes. They were tackling random people, as is kind of usual for these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But they have gotten a series of ridiculous charges: riot, arson, interfering with government property, and also domestic terrorism. So this is domestic terrorism, not even for people that are like in the forest, just people protesting out on the street.
Mm-hmm. Out on the street when windows were broken.
When windows were broken. There's no evidence of this. The bail hearings were today, as of being recorded. This is Monday. But bail hearings were today. The judge for the hearings specifically said that these hearings are not to litigate the facts of the issue. What actually happened doesn't matter. There's obviously no evidence to support that any of the people arrested did any crimes. There's no evidence that shows that the specific people arrested did anything beyond marching in the street. And that does not matter. That simply does not matter. The brutality is the point in this case. Two people have had their bail set at $355,000 each. So that's over $700,000 for just two people's bail. The other four people arrested were deemed to be from out of state by the judge, and then thus a flight risk, including people that are just like less than 90 minutes away in Tennessee. And again, this is like where people are born. There's this sense that like people no longer have freedom to choose where they live, that people like no longer have any freedom of movement, that they no longer have the autonomy to go to different places. You know, this is like in line with the outside agitator angle that's been being pushed by governments and media ever since, especially since 2020. This is in line with that sort of stuff. But because these people were deemed non-local or a flight risk, these people are not getting any bond at all. These people are going to be held in jail
indefinitely.
Indefinitely.
It's indefinite detention. Yeah.
It could, this could literally be years. The legal system is so slow, and like being held in prison or in jail for years with no evidence presented that you did literally anything wrong. I've talked with a lot of people from Solidarity Fund, which I'll mention here at the end. And you know, just people around, like what they're, you know, people are getting arrested with no evidence and getting, you know, indefinite time in prison, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars to be released. Like the obvious abuse of power by the state, the sheer audacity and you know, the extreme danger that if these are able to stick and hold is incredibly frightening for any kind of future. Any future civil rights movement at all. Like, and this
you,
is, again,
you might say that it's the strategic use of terror in order to achieve a political end.
One might say that. And I mean, we're in Atlanta. The streets they're marching on, there's banners of Martin Luther King hanging above us. Like, it's incredibly frustrating. The Solidarity Fund, which we interviewed on the show literally days before the episode released days before the killing of Tortuguita. But the Atlanta Solidarity Fund is providing both legal support and bail for people arrested for political actions. The previous amount needed to bail out people was over $100,000, which is a lot of money. And now just for two people, it's $700,000 more. So the Atlanta Solidarity Fund desperately needs funds to continue supporting people and to continue resisting state repression. We'll talk about this more once I have my deep dive episodes out on this topic, but it's crucial that if anyone cares about people's right to protest, to people's, you know, ability to resist state violence, then it's absolutely crucial that people support the Solidarity Fund right now. Just today I went to another kind of vigil at Emory College here in Atlanta. More people were sharing stories of tort. One person was reading out a letter that they sent to their comrades in Italy who are setting up a vigil as well. There's been a good amount of international support. I've seen vigils from Germany, from Italy. There's been events, demos, rallies, direct actions and vigils all across the United States about Defend the Atlanta Forest and about the killing of Tortuguita. People here absolutely do appreciate the solidarity. And the other thing people are saying is that, I mean, all of these tactics are meant to scare people away from the idea of protesting. And
yeah,
people are still needed on the ground here. This fight is not over. This is not the end. You know, tactics may have to change. Tactics may have to shift. People may have to approach things from you know, different angles, but it's not over. And there's people have said that there's still a need for, you know, for support roles for people on the ground, for people to be in Atlanta, because it's not done.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I mean, I think there's a lot of sentiment on the left that what's happening in the Atlanta Forest defense is probably the most important radical action going on in the country right now. And I think there's a few reasons for that. Not just the fact that the forest that is going to be torn down for Cop City is a crucial part of the city of Atlanta's tree cover, and that all of this ties into both the impossibility of actually combating climate change under the present system and the complicity of the police in making it impossible to combat that, or even to mitigate it in many cases. But I think what you've gotten to is probably the most direct, the most directly frightening thing about what's going on in Atlanta, and the thing that's most relevant to the future of any kind of resistance in this country, which is the gloves are coming off, right? This is not going to be the last time that state security forces use the fact that terrorism has a special place in American law, and that crimes that are deemed to be terrorism open up the ability of the government to act in ways that they normally are not supposed to be able to act. It's not going to be just forest offenders that gets used on. It's going to be anyone who ever carries out any kind of act of protest that has a chance of upsetting the balance of power in this country. Like that's where this is headed. And it's a bummer. Do you want to talk a little bit about the role of the media in this? Because that is something that is, I'm certain, going to be of we just had a thing today where some weirdo lefties on the TruAnon subreddit decided, and someone on Twitter decided to accuse me of getting a bunch of people in Atlanta arrested for terrorism because I interviewed them on camera. I've never interviewed anyone in Atlanta. I simply have never worked there. I'm not sure where the rumor started, but it's reigniting this kind of debate about.
It seems like tanky stuff. It's
nonsense, but it has reignited. And I saw this on the It Could Happen Here subreddit. People talking about like, obviously, you know, this is nonsense, but it is a, you know, looking at these terrorism charges, it's a simple fact that activists should never talk to press. And obviously, a lot of these arrests had nothing to do with anyone talking to the media. Like, folks were present at a riot and the cops were tackling folks. That's nobody but the cops' fault. But there's a conversation to be had about what is the smart balance in terms of getting PR and getting press coverage and getting word of mouth about a radical movement, and the fact that doing that will inevitably ramp up pressure. Like that is a reality that,
yes,
that when radical activists get attention from the media, the state cracks down. Now, does that mean that the media is responsible for the movement getting cracked down, or does it simply mean that the cops judge whether or not something's a threat by the amount of press that it's getting? You know, this is an ongoing like thing people are going to be talking about, and in a lot of ways it's a continuation of conversations people were having in 2020. But I'm interested in, because when you went over there, we had a few hours of debate after it became clear that the cops had killed a forest offender over like, okay, what's the right thing to do? Should Garrison head over to Atlanta? Should we have some boots on the ground for this, because you'd been covering it for so long? And one of the things you pointed out is that there was a call for media coverage from,
yes,
people who were on the ground in Atlanta.
Yes. This is something I will get more into when I go in depth, yeah, with this for an upcoming episode. Probably a two-parter. This is a conversation that people are constantly having in Atlanta. This is a conversation I've been having with people nonstop ever since coming here, ever since before coming here. This is something I don't want to just parachute into someone else's city. I had conversations with multiple people before coming over. There's a few aspects to this. The amount of people doing stuff, and you know how many people are in the forest, not a giant number of people. There's not hundreds of people living in the woods. There's not tons of people. An intentional media strategy has been a part of this movement, mm-hmm, since the beginning. Even among the insurrectionary anarchists who are here, this has been something that people have been, you know, working on as a part of a decentralized movement, having conversations about. There's been coverage in the Rolling Stone that people here seem to be pretty happy with.
Yeah, it was very, and The Guardian also published
people have been pretty happy.
Very good article.
People have been pretty happy with coverage from The Guardian. People have been pretty happy with some stuff from AJ Plus. People have been decently happy with the work that I've done on this, but based on many dozens and dozens of conversations I've had with people here. ultimately, I don't... For what cops are doing in the forest, I don't think there seems to be a clear correlation between media coverage happening of stuff of you know, the movement and cops' response to the forest. There's no linked timeline there. Cops are doing stuff in the forest because they want the forest cleared so they can build their police training or their police training facility. From what I've talked with people, the amount of pressure that has been caused by media covering the forest has not only elongated the construction process, elongated the amount that stuff that they're able to do. It has made it harder because this is not a very popular proposal. Even before the encampments started, it was estimated that like 70% of people in Atlanta were not for this. We're not for the construction of this facility. So I think people make a lot of intentional media choices. That's not to say that there isn't also intentionally harmful actors who are trying to frame this as Atlanta burning down, Atlanta in disorder, Antifa taking over sections of Atlanta. That is absolutely another part of it. But there's a very people here have a very clear distinction between bad actors, between people who are, you know, providing accurate, fair coverage of what's going on, and then, you know, people who are just out to profit, which is, you know, like a lot of like local TV channels. I think stuff that happened on the protest on Saturday is a good example. There's this far right account that I'm not going to name, at least not yet. I might talk about it in the future. Who, you know, tries to collect information on protesters. They have someone on the ground who films. They also are a really good aggregate of like random people's Instagram and TikToks or Snapchats of, you know, filming people from unfortunate angles. The local TV like the local Fox News station, you know, tries to get as much sensational footage of crimes as possible, and, you know, people to the best of their ability will, you know, try to block that off with like umbrellas if they see that happening. But, you know, it's meh. There's definitely a clear intention that people in the movement do not want the media narratives around this to solely be decided by the state and be decided against people who are in clear opposition to them. That is absolutely something that people are putting intention in. That's because that creates a lot of really, really harmful scenarios, because there's the state itself is already a pretty powerful propaganda machine. Already a lot of local news just regurgitates state talking points, right? This is the idea of the fourth estate. There does seem to be a distinction between stuff like the fourth estate than stuff like the derivative idea of the fifth estate, of being more of like the people's voice for these sorts of movements. Also in that vein, there's stuff like the Atlanta People's Press, which is a like decentralized media collective run by a lot of like rad people who help to coordinate media coverage, who help to coordinate stuff with, I mean, they've worked with us on the history of the old Atlanta prison farm. So I would say there's a lot of thought put into media strategy. And not like in like a Libby like optics way, but like actual effective media strategy that will improve material conditions and will help push the goals of the movement forward. The goal being that the construction of Cop City does not continue. So there's a lot of thought going into that, and that is viewed as another like that is another wing of the effort, right? There's stuff like the encampments, there's stuff like sabotage, there's stuff like protests, there's stuff like, you know, like a very above board stuff, you know, that like very you know, like above ground organizations will do, like, you know, write-in campaigns, call-in campaigns. And media strategy is another angle of this, because to completely give up the public perception of what's going on to the state is seen as a bad thing. So, but this is absolutely a contentious topic. I think people in Atlanta have a lot of nuanced conversations about this, and media stuff is handled with a lot more intention here than it has been in the Pacific Northwest. That is my subjective opinion, but based on
it's a smaller community, so I think maybe it's easier. It does seem like there's more
solidarity within the community and more of a shared vision?
I would say that's true. The community is forced to reinforce itself. It is small enough that it cannot treat people as disposable. It needs to maintain the people that it has. And so people work through problems, people work through conflicts and ways to actually resolve it and keep going to build everyone up and make them stronger. There is a shared community space, which I've been to a few times. And I think even just something like that is so useful in being able to actually keep something that resembles a community. You see a lot of like anarchists talk about how like community isn't a real thing. There isn't actually community, and in a lot of places, I would say that's true. A lot of places are just click-driven, scene drama. It honestly gets towards, or like inter-scene conflict, if you don't want to use the word drama. Whereas
circular firing squad type shit.
Yeah. Whereas here, there is such a feeling of actual community. Like that actually is a thing here because people are forced to foster it. We're in the South. We're surrounded. You're surrounded by a lot of people who want to hurt you. Atlanta is the most surveilled city. There's so many different police forces. There's a police force for Fulton County. There's a police force for DeKalb County. There's a police force for Atlanta. There's the Georgia State Patrol. There's the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. There's the Georgia Department of Homeland Security. There's so many people. So many agencies are involved in this. There's so much outwards threats to people that you really are forced to keep people close and trust the people around you. Because the consequences are quite dire, so people take things very seriously, and they put a lot of thought into a lot of things.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, that also gels with my own experience in the South, right? It's easier to find communities of people who are doing anything kind of radical because there's that bunker mentality, right? You're under siege. You're surrounded on all sides. And, that's very different when you go to a place where there's kind of more like what would be in other places, deviancy is more the norm. I guess that is probably has a lot to do with the fact that this forest defense has so far been so successful in delaying the construction of this facility.
Which it has. Construction deadlines continue to have been passed and been passed and been passed. It has at the very least showed that stuff like this can be resisted and significantly delayed. And at this point, they're projecting construction won't be complete for about 4 more years. And again, these deadlines keep getting pushed back and back. And that is really what the movement is trying to do. Keep these deadlines getting pushed back and back until they just give up on the project or try to put it somewhere else. And if they try to put it somewhere, then the forest was defended, but then there's still the Stop Cop City aspect of being like, it can go somewhere else, but we don't want it there at all. And then at that point, the movement would change, very significantly. But in terms of the defend the Atlanta forest aspect of this, right, the whole goal is to make this as unenticing as possible. And there's a multitude of strategies involved in that, including stuff like propaganda, agitprop, media strategy, sabotage, direct action call-in campaigns, stuff about pressuring the construction agencies, all those sort of things.
That's so much more, because what you're talking about is what we call in sort of conflict studies a strategy of friction, right? And so much, there's so always so much focus on kind of these, like we had in Portland in 2020, these like grand moments that are very visually spectacular of resistance. But what actually wins, because the state has the ability to take a lot of hits. It is a durable force, and if you're going up against a durable force, the only way to win victories is to be durable yourself and to wear away at them. It's friction, and I think that's still the winning play, is to keep up pressure. It's just the kinds of pressure, especially now that they've cleared out the tree sitters and stuff, and now that we've seen what they're going to do to people who are arrested at demonstrations. The kinds of friction that can be applied have to change. Otherwise, the movement's going to get worn down before the state does in this fight.
Something that Tortuguita has said is that the state is very good at doing violence. we cannot beat the state at violence. The state will probably win that game. That's the entire point of the state. That it, like, the state has a monopoly on violence. That is the entire point. They will win that. But there are other ways where we can see successes, and we have seen successes before. So it's not over. It will probably grow and change. What actually happens will remain to be seen. But I am I'm prepping to go through a whole bunch of my audio files, and piece together kind of a pretty succinct deep dive that is a true successor to the original On the Ground at the Defend the Atlanta Forest episodes that I did last May. So,
well, I look forward to that. I'm sure I know everyone else is as well. Thank you for going over there and being in the thick of it. And we'll continue to cover this story as best we can, but whatever comes in the future. All right, I think that's an episode.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X, makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run. Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at tomboyx.com. Shop now on tomboyx.com.